locally produced exploration of positive solutions to the ecological challenges we face as we work to create a healthier future for our community and the planet.
Evening, and thank you for tuning in to Eco Radio. On today's show, we will be speaking with Karine Page from After the Harvest, which is a nonprofit that works to get fresh foods from farmers' fields that would otherwise be wasted to people in need. We'll also hear an interview with Rabbi Moti Reber from Kansas Interfaith Power and Light discussing issues around climate change in and around the state of Kansas. But first, I'm Naturally, and I have your environmental news. In the first broad-scale estimate of air pollution removal by trees nationwide, U.S. Forest Service scientists and collaborators calculated that trees are saving more than 850 human lives a year and preventing 670,000 incidences of acute respiratory symptoms. While trees is pollution removal equated to an average air quality improvement of less than 1%, the impacts of that improvement are substantial. Researchers valued the human health effects of the reduced air pollution at nearly $7 billion every year in a study published recently in the journal Environmental Pollution. The study is unique in that it directly links the removal of air pollution with improved human health effects and associated health values. The scientists found that pollution removal is substantially higher in rural areas than urban areas. However, the effects on human health are substantially greater in urban areas than rural areas. Dave Nowak, one of the researchers, stated, quote, "In terms of impacts on human health, trees in urban areas are substantially more important than rural trees due to their proximity to people. We found that in general, the greater the tree cover, the greater the pollution removal, and the greater the removal and population density, the greater the value of human health benefits," end quote. In a landmark decision last week, the federal government approved seismic exploration for oil and gas drilling on the Atlantic coast. The Bureau of Ocean Energy Management will allow extensive seismic air gun testing off the mid and South Atlantic coasts. Seismic testing could cause major impacts for marine wildlife and the ocean ecosystem and pave the way for offshore drilling off the Atlantic coast. Quote, "Seismic air gun testing will cause catastrophic impacts to the marine ecosystem, including injury or death to hundreds of thousands of whales and dolphins," end quote, said Surfrider Foundation in a statement. Quote, "It will also set the stage for offshore drilling off the Atlantic coast, a dirty and dangerous practice that threatens the health of our oceans and coastal communities." The Surfrider Foundation, including our 25 local chapters from Maine to Florida, is deeply dismayed by the federal government's decision and will continue to fight the expansion of drilling off the Atlantic coast, end quote. This announcement follows years of intense debate with 15 public forums and many public comment periods. Tens of thousands of people have expressed opposition to the proposal and urged the government to cancel plans for seismic testing in the Atlantic. The mineral-stained canyon walls and the plunging water levels at Lake Mead, the nation's largest reservoir, are the most visible signs of the driest 14-year period in the Colorado River Basin's historical record. But the receding shorelines at the basin's major reservoirs, including Lake Mead, which fell to a record low level this month, and Lake Powell, the second largest reservoir on the Colorado, 180 miles upstream from Mead, are an insignificant hydrological change compared to the monumental disruption taking place underground. Satellite data show that in the last 9 years, as a powerful drought held fast and rivers flows plummeted, the majority of the freshwater losses in the basin, nearly 80%, came from water pumped out of the aquifers. The decrease in groundwater reserves is a volume of water equivalent to 1.5 times the amount held in a full Lake Mead, according to a study published in the journal Geophysical Research Letters. The research team used data from the GRACE satellite mission to calculate the water balance for a basin that spreads across 7 states and reaches into Mexico. For the study, the researchers looked at the period from December 2004 to November 2013. This time frame allowed them to isolate the effects of the drought on groundwater. By 2004, the basin's reservoirs were nearing record lows. Today, they are slightly, but not significantly, lower at 51% full. The steepest rates of water loss occurred in 2013, which followed one of the driest years on record. Here locally, the Independence City Council voted unanimously to retire the aging Missouri City coal-fired power plant and stop burning coal at the Blue Valley plant by January 2016. Just as exciting, the city set goals to triple clean energy over the next 7 years. This makes the city of Independence a leader in moving our state from coal to clean energy. Hello, everyone, and please, I'd like to welcome Ms. Karine Page.
Thank you, Mary.
And so you are here to talk about After the Harvest. What is After the Harvest?
Well, we are a nonprofit organization of volunteers, and we go into fields and orchards after the farmers are done with their harvest, and we pick what's left and take it to local food pantries.
Now, there's a term for that. It's called
gleaning.
Gleaning. So gleaning is when people go into the fields after the farmer has gotten what the farmer can get.
And yeah, or what he could sell, and he's, you know, ready to either till it and plant another succession crop, or he just has enough. Lots of times they plant way more than they really need, just in case it's a bad year. And so in those cases, we get not just the gleaned stuff, but, you know, basically half the crop. So that's really exciting.
So what are the crops that you have gleaned this season so far?
Pretty much A to Z, Z being zucchini. We started with greens, lettuce, kale, arugula, there's your A. Mm-hmm. We're already doing blackberries. Blackberries are this weekend also. Let's see, strawberries, apples already. Today we got our first apples.
Wow.
Pears, these are windfalls, and they're actually just early season. It's just a little bit early for those, but we got some anyway. Potatoes are coming up. Joe Steiniger, our wonderful farmer in Kansas City, Kansas, is donating most of his potato crop.
Wow.
He's very, very generous.
So, yes, where are these farms that you're gleaning?
Well, we've got about 43 in Missouri and almost that many in Kansas, and they're all in the greater, what I call the greater Kansas City area. St. Joe, Lawrence, down to Ridge Hill, Missouri, Independence.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, about within an hour drive is the furthest away that we go, although we do have another farmer in Conception Junction, which is about an hour and 45 minutes from Kansas City. But we go there because that farmer gives us the whole orchard.
Wow.
And it's Asian pears.
Wow.
Yeah.
That sounds delicious.
Yeah, it's very fun. Oh, I should tell you that we get to eat while we glean. I want my gleaners to keep up their energy. And, you know, it's you get water from, you know, eating the vegetables, too. So it's a good source of water and energy. And I want our gleaners to take this food to local pantries and be able to speak to the pantry and say, this is really good stuff. I just ate some. It's mm-hmm. not, you know, on its last legs or anything. It's perfect. The peaches, the apples, the pears that we get are super juicy and way more delicious than what you get in the store. Sorry about that, stores, but it's true.
I have so many questions. So it seems like at the food pantry, there wouldn't, without you and the services you're offering with your gleaning, people who have access to only food from the pantries, would, this seems like a good opportunity for them to get fresh foods instead of canned food and things
yes.
in boxes.
Yeah. There is a way to get fresh produce. We give harvesters semi-truck loads when we have the money available. We get semi-truck loads of free food. You just have to pay for the packaging mm-hmm. and the freight. But a lot of times that food is, you know, they couldn't sell it, so then they're getting rid of it. And it's not as good as the stuff that we glean, because the stuff that we glean is just 100% perfect, ready to eat. Some of it might look bumpy, might have an odd shape, but it tastes delicious. And, you know, there's also a way to glean from stores, and I know people do that, but often the stores are giving away produce that is, you know, they can't sell it, it's on its last legs. It's still good, it's just a little wrinkly maybe, and you have to eat it right away.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the food that we get, it's free, and it's really good.
So who are these volunteers? Do they have to have experience in the field?
It is so easy to pick stuff. I will train you how to pick a blackberry or a peach. We use all ages. I've had little babies on the backs of their moms picking apples mm-hmm. from the tree, from the mom's back and their little carrier. really all ages. There's a job for everybody. If you think you don't want to bend down, you can help me count the pounds, and we keep track of where it goes. We record all of that, so, you know, I always need help with that, too. But there's a job for everybody, and it's not hard.
So how close is the closest farm?
Well, it really depends where you live, right?
That's true.
If you live in Kansas City, Kansas, Joe Steiniger's farm is right off of 57th and I-70. Hmm. Joe Jennings is off of X-7 off of I-635. If you live in Independence, there's a really nice orchard in Independence that a church owns. They give us pretty much every apple. I think they probably take 2 bushels, and the rest of the 80 trees
wow.
are ours to donate to food pantries.
So wherever you are, listener, there's a farm for you to help careen and after the harvest.
Yes.
So how if there is someone out there listening and they want to volunteer, how would they find out when and where?
Okay, well, there are a couple of ways to do that. We have a Facebook page called After the Harvest KC, and I post stuff on there as often as I can. But there's also a little envelope icon link on that page, and it says if you want to get email notices, to just give me your name and your email address, and then you'll get notices about once a week. The farmers, though, often will just give us one day's notice or maybe two, and so I will have to send out an extra email if that happens. But this time of year, there's apples coming up, and so we know we're going to go get apples, you know, every weekend pretty soon, or every day. And you can sign up in advance. You can call me, 816-853-4460. That's my cell. You can call up till 9 p.m., 816-853-4460. And if you have an organization or a family that wants to glean on a certain day, you just let me know and I'll make it happen.
And let me just let our listeners know, if they're interested in joining the conversation, the number to call is 816-931-5534. 816-931-5534, and talk about After the Harvest and the good work they do.
So, Karine, it sounds like relationships play a large role in what you do, between the relationship you have to form with farmers and then the volunteers and also the pantries. What is something rewarding besides the fresh fruit that you get from doing this kind of work?
Well, the fact that you're feeding people in need who don't have food, and it's not just the homeless people. The biggest population that are using the pantries are children and then seniors, but it's almost everybody who can't make ends meet because, as Jim Hightower said, some people don't have jobs that pay enough. And Harvesters had a, I don't know what you'd call it, but they... A couple of years ago, they took paper plates to food pantries and had people write their stories.
Hmm.
And I read some of those, and it was eye-opening and heartbreaking. It was a nurse who has a good job, but she had 2 children in preschool, and she couldn't make ends meet. It's grandparents whose kids come home, or their grandkids come home from school, and they don't have enough food to share with the kids. It's college students who said, I never thought I'd be using a food pantry. So... It's a lot of people in the whole population, but the majority are children. It's 1 in 6 children, so that's a lot.
Hmm. So you work with harvesters, and what other pantries could we find the fresh foods you glean?
Oh, my goodness. I've got over 200 on my list now,
wow.
And I made my list by just asking the volunteers if they supported a certain food pantry in their neighborhood. And then I have that organized by city and state and zips so that we can send the gleaners to a pantry that's in between the farm and their home if they don't know of one in particular.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, it's anybody. If you're a pantry out there and you want to get on the list, you just call me, too.
When I spoke with you earlier this week, you had mentioned that... In like just 2 or 4 hours with just a certain amount of people, you were able to get this much corn. What were those numbers?
Okay.
It was just wild.
Fabulous group from Moorhead, Minnesota, basically. And it was 30 people, mostly high school and high school grads and a few adults. And I think we got 4,080 pounds in 2 hours.
Wow.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
And so do people put this in their car and they go their separate ways? Or
Well, that was a fairly large gleaning, so we get harvesters involved. We actually had, this was a wonderful farmer. He also picks corn for us. So, and we'd had a nighttime gleaning the night before, and then he picked that morning, and then we picked that morning. So we had like 8,000 pounds of corn out there, which is a lot. That would be, you know, like eight pickup trucks worth. Wow. So we just, you know, organized with harvesters to send out a truck, and then we had them all bagged, and they brought pallets, and we put them on the pallets and shrink-wrapped them and got them on the truck.
Yeah.
But just a few people can pick a lot really quickly.
I have a question. Talk a little bit about the logistics of getting the gleanings to a pantry. I mean, you're counting on the volunteers who have just picked this stuff mostly because they got transportation there. Is that right?
I usually ask people ahead of time if they want to, carry food to a pantry. And it's not a trick, but I think that if they do carry the food to a pantry and the pantry loves all over them and they see how much this food is appreciated, that they're going to come back and glean because it's like my favorite part of it. I mean, I love being out in the field. It's beautiful. The air is actually, as Jim Hightower said again, it's, you know, the trees are out there cleaning the air and air conditioning the air. It's cooler on a farm than it is in the city. And you see really neat animals and birds that you just don't see in the city. And the air smells better. I mean, it's just a fun place to be. But then when you deliver the food, it's just so worthwhile.
And so how much can fit? And so say you have, hey, everybody, meet me at this farm in Wellsville. And there will be some people from maybe in that area, but a lot of people maybe not, maybe coming all the way from Kansas City or Lee Summit or whatever. And so then those folks in their individual cars load up with whatever it is, corn or whatever it is, and then disseminate that throughout going back to their own neighborhoods.
Right. It goes every direction.
And
if they want to take it to harvesters, it goes to harvesters. On a weekend, it doesn't go to harvesters because we have to be back there before 12 and we can't make it. But it can go to Shawnee Community Services. Tons of pantries that are open on Saturdays will get the food. And pantries, again, this is for you. If you want more food, if you could open your doors on Saturday, you would get more food. There are 15 that I know of right now that are open on Saturdays, and that's where the food goes to, unless we can hold it until Monday. But that would have to be, you know, a particular type of produce, like potatoes are pretty good, sweet potatoes are good, but a lot of the stuff, peaches, nope, got to get those out right away, strawberries, nope, apples,
well,
yeah.
That leads me to another thing. This is your baby. Do you feel a lot of stress? Like, come on, we've got to take advantage of this right now before it's too late.
I don't know if it'd be stress, but I do feel passionate about getting that food.
Right.
I try to make it happen, which is why I get up early and stay up late, and I come into the radio station all dirty. I haven't changed my clothes yet.
we were pretending you were all gussied up. This is radio.
I got my overalls with really dirty knees.
Yeah.
We were getting potatoes today. It was really fun. And we're getting potatoes tomorrow in Kansas City, Kansas. Join us.
And I'll give out the phone number again.
816-853-4460. And I will give you the address when you call me.
It starts at 7:30?
Yes. It's very nice at 7:30. It's nice and cool.
Will you share with us some positive feedback you've received, maybe from a patron of the food pantry?
Sure. Doug Langner of St. James Place, which is right at 39th and Troost, basically, sent me an email saying that a woman had come back after having greens that we had given them, I'm quoting him. He said, with tears in her eyes, she said, these are the best greens I've ever had. Making me get tears in my eyes. But people really do appreciate it. It's fresh produce. I mean, I always think, what would I do? I mean, if I were in that situation where I had to use a food pantry, I would hope to God someone was still doing what I'm doing and bringing in fresh produce, because you can't live on canned and boxed food very well. It's not a good, healthy diet.
And I would remind our listeners again, if you want to join in on the conversation, the number is 816-931-5534.
And what is some feedback you've gotten, perhaps from a volunteer who had a good experience, they didn't know what to expect, and ended up being changing their life? Or just
Well, I'll tell you, I haven't ever had any complaints about it not being fun. You can kind of tell who really gets into it, because all of a sudden they're there almost at every gleaning. I don't know. There are lots of special people that have become really dear friends, not just the farmers. I mean, so many of the farmers are very, very dear to my heart, too. But there's so many cool volunteers out there. Theresa Thompson and Clay Jarrett and Tom Decker, Candace Scott, Camry Ivory. Some people have moved away and started gleaning in other places. I mean, lots of really special people out there.
So are you running after the harvest by yourself, or do you have a partner in this?
I have a partner. Lisa Owsley is our executive director, and she raises funds and speaks to a lot of groups and is involved with all kinds of stuff, really cool things going on in Kansas City. She was a founding member of Giving Grove, which we partner with. They have planted fruit and nut trees and bramble bushes, anything that's perennial, all over Kansas City, in churchyards and schools and all over, and train the people how to take care of the plants. And pretty soon, to me it's pretty soon, 5 years down the pike, supposedly, there's going to be 5 million pounds to glean in Kansas City. Not outside of Kansas City, but in Kansas City. So it's exciting and scary at the same time. But I'm hoping the neighbors where this food is planted will, you know, pick as much as they can take, and, you know, then there won't be that much gleaning for us. But that's the whole idea, is to plant the food right where it's needed. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty exciting.
Can youth groups, like, or summer programs, or just groups of young people come set up?
Yes, I will take everybody and anybody as long as they can take instruction. Sometimes we're only given certain rows, and so you have to stay on those rows. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the roads are really close to other rows, so you can't, like, just be walking all over the other, like, can't be stepping on the onions while you're getting the greens. Mm-hmm. But we take all ages, and I leave it up to the, if parents have young kids, I leave it up to them whether they think their kids would like it or not. And I'm out there 2 to 3 hours. If it's an apple orchard, I might be out there all day, but I let people come and go as they want. And, you know, I don't ever want anybody to be worn out, because I want them to think this is the most fun thing they ever did, and they're mm-hmm. going to come back again.
Mm-hmm. I'd be worried just getting out there and eating all the blackberries myself.
Oh, there's so much food, you wouldn't eat them all.
So you'll be getting to the blackberries in St. Joe this Wednesday.
Yes. It's Wednesday. Okay, so it's Monday. This is my eighth day. When I don't have a Saturday or a Sunday, my head gets really crazy about what day it is. So this is Monday. Mm-hmm. Yes, so it's Wednesday. And tomorrow we'll be in Kansas City, Kansas, getting potatoes. Saturday we'll be in Raytown, Missouri, getting all kinds of stuff mm-hmm. from a really cool farmer, Josiah Chumba. He grows food for his neighborhood,
wow.
and he sells the food, and he has started an orphanage in Kenya, and he supports the orphanage with this.
Wow.
Yes.
Some inspirational work.
Oh, it is so fun. This is just the best job ever, and you meet so many cool farmers and just so many nice people, and everybody wanting to help everybody. When you're away from the news, everything seems pretty fine. You know, what's going on here? We're all trying to help each other.
Yeah, that's really neat. So tell me a story about a farmer then.
Okay. Oh my gosh. Okay, well, the first one that comes to mind is Joe Steiniger. That was the first gleaning that I ever led, was at his farm. And we were getting turnips, and it had been a really hard freeze the night before. It probably was like 19 degrees, something like that. And we were out there at 9 in the morning, and it was still freezing cold. And we were digging the turnips up, and he was right out there with me, digging them up. We had a small group out there, and we were just talking about the turnips, and we were looking at this field of mustard that was in the shade, and the sun hadn't hit it yet because it was by a hill. And we kept thinking, oh, my gosh, if we'd just been out here the day before, we could have saved all this mustard, but it's frozen solid, and when the sun hits it, it's going to just all droop and be mush. And we kept looking at it, and the sun came over the hill and hit the mustard, and the mustard was looking pretty good, and then it was completely thawed out, and it looked great.
Wow.
And I said, well, you know, Joe, if you were actually just selling that mustard over there, it would have been completely mush. Mm-hmm. But the fact that you're giving it all away to feed people in need, God saved it.
Mm-hmm.
And we just sort of bonded over that. And I feel like he treats me like his granddaughter. I never knew my grandparents, so this is a really cool, special relationship I have, because now I feel like I have my first grandparent ever, my grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
Lets me drive his truck around the farm, and I get to feel like a farm girl. I get to load the truck with bales of hay, and he's a really cool guy.
So did you grow up working on a farm?
No.
Wow.
My dad grew up on a farm.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't, that was in Minnesota, so I never really had to work on a farm. Every now and then we'd have a family reunion, and we'd go up and we might pick blueberries just for pancakes once, or we might pick peas just for dinner that one time, but not like working all day on the farm, no.
So how did you get involved in this work?
Well, that's a fun story, too, I guess. A few years ago, a bunch of people were working to change the codes in Kansas City to allow farms to actually grow food inside the city limits.
Hmm.
And I got involved because I wanted chickens. But they said, let's work on the vegetables first,
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how I met Lisa Owsley, because she was there to say, if there's a farm in town, we can glean it. You don't have to worry about, excess food and rats and all of this stuff. And that's how I got involved. I met her, and then there was a job opening, and I had a great job, and I was telling all my friends, you need to apply for this job right away. And this is when we were part of Society of St. Andrew. Mm-hmm. We broke off of them so we could be just completely local and just serve everybody in the Kansas City area and not every state west of the Mississippi, mm-hmm. which was my territory, which was insane. Talk about being tired.
Would you have to drive all the way out there?
I drove all over the place. I got some gleaning going in Minneapolis. It mostly was on the phone, and making a turnkey program to get that going. But that was really too much. You really have to be hands-on and get a relationship with the farmers, and it was too hard to do that.
They're key. Well, I'm glad you're localized here.
Yeah.
That's good. So are there any other organizations that you work with, you partner with, that you get support from, or you support them?
Well, Episcopal Community Services is a really good partner with us. I said all the food that we gleaned is really perfect, but sometimes it isn't. But mm-hmm. they have this really cool program where they have a lot of people helping in this catering business that they started for people that get out or are homeless and need a job, or they get out of prison and they need a job and they need training.
Mm-hmm.
And so we can take this not totally perfect produce there, mm-hmm. and they'll make salsa out of the tomatoes after they cut out the stuff, or we mm-hmm. might take seconds of some sort of fruit, and they'll turn it into something. They'll make cobbler out of it, or turnovers, and so that's a good thing. We can save a lot more food that way.
Mm-hmm.
And we do have a caller on the air. Caller, you're on the air. What's your name, and where are you calling from?
Okay, my name is Anthony, and I'm calling from Kansas City, Kansas. And my question is, can you have chickens in Wyandotte County and, say, for instance, the area I stay between 65th and, say, 80th and Leavenworth Road? I have, my parents in my house, is between there, and we are always wondering if we could have chickens in our backyard, you know, not a whole lot, but just a few for egg purposes and things like that. Is that against the law? And we stay like two blocks north of Leavenworth Road, our five highway, and say three blocks south of Leavenworth Road.
I can't speak about Kansas City, Kansas.
Okay.
I only was working on the Kansas City, Missouri side, but I'll tell you what. J14 Enterprises, which is off of, I think it's Leavenworth Road, they've got a lot of chickens on their farm. But I can't answer your question, but I bet you could look it up, you know, or call your council people in Kansas City.
Okay.
Kansas.
Okay, I'll do that. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, caller. And tell me, how many farms in Missouri do you work with currently?
I've got 43 on my list. But at any one year, they won't all be calling us. You know, it just really depends on their crops, how their crops are doing, if they had extra. Sometimes they don't think it's worth calling us because they don't have that much extra.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you have that many in Kansas? Or?
Almost that many, yes. I'm working on finding more.
So if anyone wants to volunteer, they can check out the Facebook page and sign up to be on the email list of when gleanings occur. And they can also call you, Karine, at 816-853-4460. And you're always looking for volunteers, right?
Absolutely. The limiting factor about this food rescue is volunteers. We never, ever get all the food that's out there, try as we might. That 4,080 pounds that we got that one day, we could have stayed another 3 hours, but that was a really hot day, by the way. So we cut it short whenever it gets hot.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I only want to work 2 to 3 hours in a day, unless it's a really beautiful day.
Mm-hmm.
But we never get all the food. That one farmer who's giving us corn in Wellsville, so, you know, you had like 15 acres. That's a lot of corn. And, you know, I mean, this one orchard has 900 trees. Another one has 80 trees. Another one is like 1/4 mile of trees, you know. And
wow.
There's so much food out there. And the limiting factor is just people.
It's just as amazing because I think about the billboards I've seen in our city about people who are struggling with hunger. And it doesn't have to be that way. There's plenty of food.
Well, there is, and it's just logistics. It's just getting it to people. We've actually had people who gleaned with us who had used food pantries before,
mm-hmm.
and took the food back to the same pantry that they'd
used.
That's
a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
So this is Eco Radio, and we talk a lot about the environmental issues in the world and our access to good, clean health, energy, food, and this is a real opportunity for anyone out there listening to get involved and make a difference, a real difference. And it's not anything that's very difficult. You just got to call Karine at 816-853-4460, and you can make a difference in someone's life and get this fresh food away from being wasted and into the food pantry. So this has just been an excellent interview, and I appreciate you for being here, Karine.
Thank you.
And go on to Facebook and like their Facebook page, After the Harvest Casey.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I have liked it. And while you're there, like our Eco Radio page too. But
please do. Yeah.
But I'm on After the Harvest, and I've signed up for the time. She'll put you on an email list so you can know when the gleanings are occurring. And like she said, sometimes the farmers let her know 1 to 2 days in advance. So make sure you sign up.
And you can also set up your own day. If you want to glean on a special day because you know that you're off work that day, or you know you have 4-H club meeting that day, or mm-hmm. scouts meet that day, we will make it happen. And when school starts, we have a lot of afternoon gleanings so that schools can come and spend an hour or two with us and get apples, because that's what happens in September.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great. See, so moms and dads out there who have kids and Boy Scouts, Cub Scouts, Girl Scouts, Campfire Girls, there's something you could propose at their next meeting, that you guys can get a group together and go and volunteer your time.
I smell merit badge.
Yeah, that's a,
yeah, we had a an Eagle Scout do his work on setting up a gleaning network, mm-hmm. and he organized the gleaning. I found him the farmer, mm-hmm. but then he did everything else, and he organized the gleaning. So instead of, like, getting cans for harvesters, they got fresh produce for harvesters.
It's a beautiful thing.
And harvesters loves fresh produce. They are really asking for it now. So you can also just bring some in if you don't want to glean, but you can glean with us and then take them the free food.
And, like she mentioned earlier, you get to eat while you're gleaning.
Yes.
I don't know, the last time I was in a farm, you know, knowing I was going to help someone who wasn't going to be able to eat, and I got to also have some fresh fruit right off of the bush.
Well,
there.
Think about this. You're like 45 minutes from nowhere, right, or from anywhere, and I'm not going to let anybody drive somewhere and leave the field to go get a snack. You know, it's like, it's right here. I tell people, skip the cornflakes in the morning. You can eat the corn right off the cob for breakfast.
Wow.
Because you're going to be there at 7:30 anyway before your stomach's quite awake. So mm-hmm. have the real deal.
And we did have a caller. She didn't want to be on the air, but she had two things to say. One, you guys are doing a wonderful job here on the radio getting the word out. And two, that you can indeed have chickens in Wyandotte County.
Oh, great. Well, thank you, caller, for letting us know. Anthony, I hope you heard that.
Yeah, I hope Anthony was listening. So I guess we have to go to the calendar now, but
okay.
maybe you want to give the phone number out one more time.
Sure. 816-853-4460, and you will get me. And I go to bed early because I get up early. So if you would please not call after 9 p.m., that would be great. But you can call me at 6:30 if you want, a.m.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'll be on the road by then, and I'll take your call.
Oh, okay.
All right. Thank you, Karine.
Thank you, Erin.
Again, this is Karine Page. Well, I'm Natural Leave. She is Karine Page with After the Harvest, KC. You can find them on Facebook. So for our calendar events today, Seed Savers 101 will teach beginners how to save seeds from their gardens. The class will cover why seed saving is important, how to save seeds, and will include demonstrations of different seed saving methods. The workshop is hosted by Seed Savers KC. And this class will be held from 2 to 4 p.m. August 2nd at the Anita B. Gorman Discovery Center, which is located at 4750 Troost. And for information on this event, you can find it at greenabilitymagazine.org. Also, I've posted this to our Facebook page. And for the next few gleanings with our guest, Karine Page, and After the Harvest, there'll be one tomorrow, July 29th, at 7:30, and they will be gleaning potatoes in Kansas City, Kansas. And the next day, Wednesday, July 30th, 8 a.m., at Blackberries at St. Joe. And Saturday, August 2nd, at Raytown, Missouri. So give Karine a call, and you can find her number also on the Facebook page. Thank you for listening to Eco Radio.
And just one other thing along this line of seeds, Vandana Shiva will be on Alternative Radio Wednesday speaking on seeds and freedom. That's Wednesday morning at 9, right after Democracy Now! Here's something else coming up on KKFI, and then we'll hear my interview with Rabbi Moti Reber.
This Tuesday on Radioactive Magazine, David Mitchell presents a discussion of the efforts of the Citizens Climate Lobby to significantly and responsibly reduce U.S. carbon emissions with Lynette Pettengill and Mary Helen Korbelik. Sheila Styron of The Whole Person discusses the organization and its 30-year effort helping people with disabilities to live independent lifestyles. That's Tuesday night, 6 o'clock, Radioactive Magazine on KKFI 90.1 FM, Kansas City Community Radio.
Well, I'm pleased to be sitting here with Rabbi Moti Reber. He's the director of Kansas Interfaith Power and Light, an interfaith environmental organization, and we'll hear more about that. But first I want to say to you, Moti, that's a really nice article about you in the Kansas City Star on Saturday.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Mike. Thanks for having me also.
Yeah.
Pretty exciting to get your to get into the hometown paper like that.
Yeah, yeah, it is pretty cool. So they talked about your challenges in getting the word of being stewards of the earth into different faith communities.
Mm-hmm.
And one of your tools is the book of Genesis. But in spite of the fact you're a rabbi, you're not afraid to quote Jesus either.
And right, he's a nice Jewish boy.
Yeah, exactly. So you've been at this for a couple of years now.
3 years.
3 years.
Yeah, started in March of 11. And so basically what IPL is that we are a faith response to climate change. So I go around to communities all around the state of Kansas and talk to them about the challenge of climate change and the moral responsibility we have to deal with it. And a lot of that comes out of our faith traditions, our shared faith traditions, and our individual faith traditions. So often I'll bring the language of in Genesis 2, it says that we're responsible for tilling and tending. Mm-hmm. Adam was given the responsibility to till and tend the garden, and I ask, is that what we're doing? And then the Jesus quote that I mostly use is about attending to the least of these, which talks about our responsibility to deal with an issue that we've caused, which is causing distress to the poorest people in the world, really.
So climate change, it's not only an environmental issue, but a social justice issue.
It's definitely a moral issue. Every faith tradition, from the Unitarians to the Evangelicals, has a statement in their records about the responsibility to care for creation. Because being good stewards of God's earth is something that everybody can relate to, but the issue with climate change is that it's something that we're causing that's causing distress to other people. So many, especially in Christian communities, they really resonate with this. You know, many Christian communities have spent a lot of time and a lot of money doing what they call mission work in the developing world. So they'll give money to education or to healthcare, nothing but nets. And the very people that they're giving that money to are the people who stand to who suffer the worst from the repercussions of climate change. So in Kansas, in America, we're blessed. We can turn up the air conditioning if it gets too hot. But people in the Philippines, people in Nairobi, Kenya, can't do that. So that's where the responsibility comes from, because we've caused their problems, and we need to stop doing that.
So when you go and visit these congregations, what's your hope? What's your best case scenario to come out of it? Is it for churches, synagogues, temples, mosques to green up their own act, reduce their carbon footprint? Is there more to it than that? Is it to take the torch from you? And
our mission is threefold. So the way we deal with this is threefold. We help churches and congregations generally to do environmental upgrades on their spaces. So we help them to change out their light bulbs. We help them to put in smart metering of their heating and cooling, that sort of thing. The second thing is that we teach and preach about the faith basis of environmental stewardship. And the third thing is that we advocate on the public policy level for policies that support clean energy development and efficiency. So, for instance, in the last 2 years in the Kansas legislature, I've worked very, very tirelessly, if I may say so, mm-hmm. to defend the renewable portfolio standard policy that we have that says that in Kansas, utilities are supposed to get 20% of their electricity energy load from renewable sources by 2020. And the enemies of green energy have spent the last 2 years trying to defeat this policy. So that's a big piece of it. So when I go into a church, A, I'm trying to get them to green their spaces. B, I'm trying to get them to recognize that there's a faith responsibility here, a moral responsibility here. And I'm also trying to get people who are going to be willing to call up their legislators and say, let's do the right thing by the environment. Let's start moving towards a clean energy system.
And so do you get folks to – I mean, do you try and recruit people for membership? Is that something?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean – clergy for membership?
Well, clergy and also lay people.
Okay.
I mean, there's two models, and they're kind of in conflict with each other a little bit. One is to get membership from churches themselves, so then a church would become a member congregation of Kansas IPL. And we have about 50 churches that are in that category. And then the other piece, and it sort of conflicts with the advocacy piece, because in the advocacy piece, I'm going to try to find the 20 people in the church who are going to be willing to write an email about the issues that I'm talking about. So sometimes it's more important to actually put that good information in front of those 20 people than it is to try to get the whole church to make a decision like that. You know, churches are notoriously, congregations in general, I shouldn't just say churches, everybody falls into this, are notoriously risk averse. They don't want to alienate people. Mm-hmm. So, you know, people say, well, are you going to preach to the converted, so to speak? I mean, I don't think that, I think the answer to that is no. But what I'm trying to do is get to people and present them with good information, so hopefully I can motivate them to take some action on an issue that, as it comes up.
So how do you end up at a congregation on any given Sunday? Are you invited? Do you make a call? Do you introduce yourselves in advance, or people seek you out? A little of both.
A little of both. Yeah, I mean, so, I have members of my steering committee who are representatives of different denominations. So the chair of the steering committee is Reverend John Martin, who's in Rose Hill, which is down by Wichita, and he's a United Methodist pastor. So he'll send out emails to his friends or people that he thinks are his colleagues, people he thinks are open to this kind of thing. And then I'll talk to them directly. And I have two programs that I do at a church. One is the sermon. I'll give the message if they'll let me. And the other one is a PowerPoint presentation I have called Caring for Creation, which basically explains climate change and the faith responsibility, moral responsibility to deal with it, and how we effectively deal with it. So a lot of churches have two services. So I'll do the sermon and then the adult education in the middle, the PowerPoint presentation, and then the second sermon, or I'll just do this presentation in the middle. And the presentation is a little bit, it's easier for a pastor to let me do the presentation because it's not so monologic. You know, it's not me standing on the platform at the dais saying, this is the truth, right? It's much more, people can ask me about questions they have, or they can argue with me if they want to. It's difficult to do that in a sermon setting. So the PowerPoint presentation is usually better attended, and it's usually a much more lively conversation.
Are some congregations like resistant to turning over the pulpit to someone from another faith tradition?
Sure. Yeah. That's it depends on the congregation. The more traditional or conservative with a small c that a congregation is, the less likely they're going to want to do that. But I have seen that. I mean, obviously they have done that. I spoke at a church in Hayes. Actually, I'm speaking at a church in Tecumseh on this coming Sunday, which is over by Topeka.
Oh, okay.
United Methodist Church in Tecumseh, Kansas. And then in September, I'm going to be speaking at First Presbyterian. Little less fraught to speak to First Presbyterian. They were a charter member of Kansas IPL, and they've been a member congregation for many years. So they're used to the message, and they have a very strong green team and a strong environmental consciousness.
So when we're talking about different faith traditions, it's hard for me to ask the question with a one size fits all terminology. So I'll ask this from I'll use the Catholic perspective. So do you go? I mean, in addition onto a parish by parish level, do you have work at the diocesan level as well?
I try to. I have some friends in the both the Methodist diocese and the Episcopalian diocese in Topeka. So it's a matter of sort of getting to the bishop and getting it on his agenda in both of those cases. Now, both bishops signed our recent faith statement, so we can talk about that a little bit too. So that's a good in, because they already know who we are, and it's a matter of sort of getting to the point where they prioritize it enough to get the message out there.
Okay, well, let's talk about that faith statement.
So earlier in the year, the EPA has proposed regulations to limit carbon emissions from already existing power plants. That's a big initiative. And there's a lot of politics around it, particularly in red states like Kansas, where there's a lot of posturing about the EPA. So we had over 60 clergy from all over Kansas sign a statement in support of the new carbon rules. So talking about climate change, talking about Jesus' admonition to care for the least of these, talking about the repercussions of climate change that we've seen in the last couple of years, including extreme weather events and drought and the melting of the Arctic sheet and all that kind of stuff. And as faith leaders, we believe we have an obligation to protect future generations from climate change by reducing carbon pollution. Coal plants are the biggest source of carbon pollution, and we support the EPA's common sense solutions, including energy efficiency, reducing our reliance on fossil fuels, modernizing and retooling our power plants, and retiring the dirtiest and oldest plants. And this is signed by 60 clergy members from all traditions. I'm just looking down the list. Jewish, of course, United Methodist. There's a community of nuns in Leavenworth called Sisters of Charity that's been a very strong supporter of IPL.
Oh, yeah.
Colonial UCC, Manhattan Mennonite. I mean, a lot of different traditions, a lot of different churches.
That's fascinating. Could I ask you to maybe perhaps post that on Eco Radio KC's Facebook page later?
I'd be happy to. Yeah. I'd be happy to. And there's hearings. Our listeners might want to keep an eye on this week, because there's hearings in Atlanta and Washington and Denver about these very regulations. And people can still make comments, and I'll put that link up on the website also, on the Facebook page also.
That would be very helpful.
So this is really great, and this is like these were people. A lot of these people were people I didn't really know, the clergy. Like, I asked people. We did a lot of social networking on this, so I know a Presbyterian clergy person, and they send it to their list, and then I end up with 6 or 8 Presbyterian clergy people signing this document, which puts them on our list and also makes them invested in the issue. We also got a little bit of press for this because it ran in full in the Wichita Eagle. And then also got coverage in Hutchinson and in Kansas City. It was a letter to the editor, and in Lawrence, which is where I have a pulpit. So we did get a pretty good amount of publicity for this. I mean, there's a lot of posturing going on this issue because the Holcomb plant in western Kansas is still looming out there somewhere. Supposedly, the state Department of Health and Environment gave them a new permit to build out there, but I don't know whether it's likely that we're ever going to see that. So they basically did that, we think, as a political thing to help in legislative election races out there. But right now there's no demand for that power, and also they have no financing for the plant. So all they have is a permit, which they're probably going to get sued for anyway. But demand is down. That plant was permitted initially envisioned in the mid-2000s before the crash, before the recession, and electricity demand is down. Plus, we have a large amount of new wind and solar capacity coming online. So new coal plants, not only don't they make economic sense, but they don't make sense in terms of the EPA regs, because according to the EPA regs, Kansas has to lower its carbon emissions by 23% by 2025, and it's going to be real hard to do that if you build a big new coal plant. So it's politics. We don't think it's actually going to happen, although there's a dark money organization from Washington putting out a lot of ads promoting the coal plant, promoting the governor's involvement in the coal plant as a political thing, now that there's a lot of legislative elections and gubernatorial election this year.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but this issue has been around since Sebelius was governor. So at one point I heard that this was for electricity that not necessarily was going to Kansas.
Right, most of it's going to go to Colorado, actually. So it's Wyoming coal burnt in Kansas for the sake of Colorado energy users.
For the people of Kansas to breathe, right?
Right. Yeah. Well, of course, anything that deals with climate change also deals with the ancillary effects of coal-burning power plants, such as NOx and SOx. It's called nitrous oxide and particulates. And in terms of the cost, the health benefits outweigh the costs of ramping down coal plants, of building new capacity.
Yeah.
Just by themselves, just the immediate health costs, not even counting carbon, not even counting climate.
Wow.
But the issue with climate is climate, and this is one of the drawbacks of having this be a state issue, is that climate change doesn't stop at the state line.
Right. Right.
If we burn coal here, it's not like Colorado's not going to get warm. I mean, Colorado has a big problem. Colorado's like the petri dish of climate change. You know, first they have wildfires, then they have floods because there's no trees there anymore.
Yeah.
So it's been a very, very big problem for them. So it's no, you know, I guess it's no surprise that they want to outsource it to us. But climate change is not a state issue. It's not even a regional issue. It's a worldwide issue. And the other thing I wanted to say, kind of going back to the RPS issue, is the RPS became a big issue because Americans for Prosperity and the Koch brothers basically are against green energy. So they spent a ton of money on the renewable portfolio standard issue in the legislature. I spent $350,000 in lobbying and publicity this year alone in trying to overturn this policy, which brings wind has been great for Kansas. The RPS is the one policy that we have that promotes wind energy. The numbers that we use are $7 billion and 13,000 jobs in Kansas from wind energy alone since the RPS went in. So why would a legislator be against it? It doesn't make any sense to be against it,
right.
But the Koch brothers are against it, so therefore it's a free market issue from their point of view, and therefore people vote against it. But we've been able to keep it for the last couple of years because even you'd be surprised, Mike. I mean, talk about politics making strange bedfellows. You know, we're sitting down with the most conservative members of the Kansas legislature from these rural districts, and they're asking us, you know, how can we get more wind in our district?
Wow.
Because it brings economic opportunity, it brings payments in lieu of taxes, it brings energy and excitement to areas that don't have a lot of that.
Right.
You know, and that's why it wins. You know, people try to make the environment seem like it's a niche liberal issue.
Yeah.
But when you're talking about clean energy, that's something that really can appeal across the board. And I think that's one of the reasons why climate change and clean energy in general has become more of an issue these days, because people are seeing that the solutions are not as frightening as they originally thought.
Okay, so you've been at this with Kansas Interfaith Power and Light for 3 years now.
Mm-hmm.
How has the climate on the whole climate change issue changed, if at all?
This is a really interesting issue this year. I mean, I think for the first after the defeat of the cap and trade bill in 2010, the issue just kind of went completely away, and you almost weren't allowed to talk about it. Democrats were afraid to talk about it, and Republicans don't want to talk about it. So it has been very quiet, and most of the focus has been on how do we make strides without talking about climate change, because climate change is such a nuclear issue, such a radioactive mm-hmm. issue that we can't talk about it, so we have to try to find some other way to deal with it. And usually that was through clean energy, until they caught on to that and they were against clean energy too.
Mm-hmm.
But this year we've seen the new IPCC report came out, the International Panel on Climate Change released a new report. The National Assessment, the United States National Assessment, which is every 5 years, came out again this year. And those were both very strong, and the White House did a really great job, and the EPA did a really good job developing infographics and digestible pieces of information so that people can understand the impacts and the costs associated with climate change. Because when you have extreme weather events, just to use one example, I mean, people talk about how much it would cost to change the energy system to a more green energy system, but how much does it cost to recover from Hurricane Sandy? How much is New York going to spend on a seawall to defend Battery City?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're getting into real money there.
Right.
You know, how much does it cost if Kansas goes into drought and the farm and agricultural yields aren't where they should be? I mean, these things cost real money. The other thing that happened, which I thought was interesting, was when Marco Rubio had a statement where he said that he wasn't a scientist and he didn't know whether climate change was real or not.
Right.
And he got slammed pretty severely in the press about that. And that's the first time I can remember that happening, like where there's a real political cost to climate change denial, where you'll get called out on it. And we're not there yet in Kansas, obviously. There's no percentage in talking about climate change from that point of view, but we do understand that, for instance, clean energy and water supply, these things are all something that are impacted by climate change.
Okay.
Oh, and the other thing that happened, I want to mention that was the Neil deGrasse Tyson show,
uh-huh.
Cosmos. He was very strong about that, and then also there was one on Showtime called Years of Living Dangerously, and there was a specifically Kansas-focused episode of that show.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah, and there's going to be – you should keep your eyes posted. because we're going to co-sponsor with our partners, Climate and Energy Project. We're going to co-sponsor a viewing of that episode.
Oh, that's
sometime
great.
In Johnson County. We don't have a date yet, but if people just go onto the IPL website, kansasipl.org, and they can sign up for emails and get that information. And that's where our upcoming events would be listed. And we also have a Facebook. I'll do a little plugging here.
Yeah.
We also have a Facebook page, which is facebook.com/KansasIPL. And we also have Twitter, which is also KansasIPL. And also I tweet under RebMoti, R-E-B-M-O-T-I, at RebMoti. So that's how you can keep in touch with all of our stuff.
Oh, that's great. Anything else we haven't...
Yeah, there's a couple of things I want to plug before we, again, referencing people back to our website. We have a solar leasing program. You can put solar